So May also used to be considered bad luck to get married. There was a rhyme that said, marry in May and you'll rue the day. Rue, I'm assuming, means hate or feel sad about.
Oh, yeah.
Ironically, that's when I got married. My first time.
I got married in May too.
Oh my gosh, do you rue the day?
I rue the day.
I rue the day that I got married to my first husband.
Oh. Ooh, what day was it?
May 31.
Oh, man. Just under the gun.
I know. Gosh, I almost didn't rue the day.
If you had waited one more day, you may not have actually gotten married.
Oh my gosh, I know. It was literally minutes after the marriage when I'm like, can we
Whoopsies.
rewind? If I could turn back time.
I really rue this day.
Welcome back, friends. You are listening to the Struggle Well Project, the podcast that helps you love your actual life so you don't have to run away from home. We believe here that perfection is nonsense and peace is a perspective shift away. So at the top of the show, you heard my sister and I talking about ruining the day. Every time I listen to that clip, it makes me laugh. So in case Katie and I are not the only ones that think we're funny and you would also like to get two additional shows each month, go ahead and join us at patreon.com/strugglewellproject. You can join for as little as a dollar a month. You get extra shows. You get a private Facebook group. So this week I had a perspective shift I wanted to share with you. I had a patient come into our facility and they were very embarrassed to be there, very mad that they were there. Every possible wall had been constructed and it was very clear that they were trying to keep people out. I'm trying to not say if it's a boy or a girl. We'll see how long it works till I lose it. I'm not very good at this. Anyhow, so I decided that I would sit in it with this person who clearly did not want me there. And I would ask them questions to try to draw them out. And I would pray when there was silence that this person would understand how valuable they were and that I would be able to hit on the topic that would be of interest to them and make them light up. So I just kind of stubbornly sat there and prayed for them, even though they wanted me to go away. It was not easy because my normal perspective would be like, peace out. See you later. Sorry that you are mad about your life. Anyway, but as I kind of sat there in the discomfort of another person not wanting my presence around, this person slowly started opening up and telling me so much about their story. And I was honored to be able to share it with them that moment. And then later, the next day, this person told me, you know what, I'm trying so hard not to like you, which is so sweet to hear. But they said, I don't know why, but I told you more than I ever tell anybody the other day. And so I think it's such a good perspective shift, like sitting in it with people when all we want to do is run away because we can tell they don't want us around. The people who are the hardest to love are the ones who need the love the most. And so I would just encourage you to stubbornly pray for the people who want you out of their face and just keep loving them. And eventually they may just start to like you even if they don't want to. Just a thought. So my guest this week, her name is Hallie Graves. I asked her to come on the show because her life is incredibly fascinating, and I want to share her adventures with you. She offers a lot of amazing perspective shifts on things that could be struggles that she turns out into struggling well moments, for sure. So let's jump right in. Good morning, Hallie. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm kind of on day five of a cold, so if I sound a little gross, you know.
Do you do the medicine ball tea?
Tell me about that.
It's this magical thing from Starbucks that is, it's like a peppermint tea and some sort of herbal tea and steamed lemonade. So they like use lemonade to like steep the tea and it's insanely sweet, but I swear it's not actually medicinal, but it makes me feel better. So.
And it's like a secret menu item?
Yeah. They know what you mean, I think, if you say medicine ball tea.
So I used to work there and I never knew that.
Yeah, it might be $14. I'm not sure, but it's really, really good. And it makes me feel like I'm on the road to recovery. You know, it's like the sugar and stuff. So
there you go. Everybody knows sugar makes you healthier.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Well, will you tell us about who exactly you are?
Yeah. So I am an Austinite. I live in Austin, Texas, and I am a single mom to infants and toddlers who are in foster care. So that's kind of what I do with a lot of my time. I'm also a lawyer and spend all of the non-parenting hours doing mostly law stuff. And I've started speaking and writing and doing fun things related to foster care. I'm on the board of several organizations and yeah, just kind of fill every spare second so that I don't have to do anything boring or sleep or anything like that. So
it seems like it. I was reading about you and I thought, well, Hallie does what she wants. Hallie does some interesting things. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I get bored really easily. So I kind of take on as many hats as I can. Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question. A lot of questions. Number one, you have a voice degree.
I do. Yeah.
I almost studied voice. I did a bunch of competitive singing like before college. But what are you, a soprano or what are you?
Yeah, I'm a soprano.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually entered college as a theater and math double major, which makes a lot of sense.
Interesting.
And kind of migrated my way. I was always in a voice studio, but I migrated my way out of theater and into a voice major. So, yeah. As one does.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so have you, like, what would be the worst thing that's happened while you were performing?
I don't know. I learned pretty early on that I can't have dairy or carbonation, like, within a 24-hour period before singing. And so yeah. I don't know that I've actually, like, burped during a performance, but I've definitely had that feeling that, like, it's right here in my chest. And something really bad is going to happen. And I had the most, I don't know what your voice teachers were like, but mine have always been extremely strict and, you know, just like really intense. And so I'm just performing, like hoping that something doesn't go terribly wrong, you know, to where they accuse me of not taking my art seriously or something like that.
Oh, wow. So. Okay. No, I think I stopped before I got teachers like that.
Yeah.
Because I loved, I love cheese. So that would be a problem.
Right. Yeah, it was hard. I had a like everyone in college. So everyone who has the same voice teacher would come and perform for each other once a week and we'd get graded on it. And so I'd have to avoid like all fun things for 24 hours before doing that. And then immediately after, of course, I would go have like cereal and Coke just because I can.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So now I want to ask you questions about your law degree. Law. I don't even say it like that. Do you have a specialty that you work in right now?
Yes, I do trial work. So I do commercial litigation, like companies suing each other or employees suing companies, things like that. So I do some courtroom stuff. And most of the time, I'm not actually physically in the courtroom, but I do have a courtroom component to what I do. Which again keeps things dramatic and interesting. So
yeah. Okay. So is it like it is on the TV shows, courtrooms?
Not really. I feel like the TV shows, everything is presented in like 20 minutes and it's all very neat and they have a resolution, and that's just not, most of my cases last more than 2 years easily. And like nothing really moves forward every time we go to court. You know, it's like, it's just like the tiniest little thing happens in court, and then you go away and you come back 2 months later and something else happens. Trials can be really dramatic, kind of like TV, but I don't think it would be dramatic for anyone watching it who doesn't know what's going on, if that makes sense. Because it's not like there's no gasps in the courtroom, you know, like this fact came up, you know. But I worked for a judge for a couple of years, and we did both criminal and civil law. And criminal cases, there are a lot more sort of interesting things that happen in the moment, and interesting people. And so, yeah, it is a very interesting job, though. Like, you kind of are thrown curveballs all the time and have to figure out kind of how to handle it. And yeah, every case is super different. Every client's different. And I love it. And I think it actually, I didn't even think about this before I started fostering, but it's been really helpful that I know the courts and know kind of, I'm very comfortable in a courtroom for when I need to like advocate for one of my kids, even though I'm not their lawyer in their, you know, cases or anything like that.
Yeah, I was thinking that when, because I was a foster mom too, and that's my experience with being in a court. And so I can imagine that would be really helpful.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think there's good and bad to it because I also know what should be happening. And so there are a lot of times that I am trying to figure out how to nicely tell someone that they're not really doing their job or that there's other things they could be doing to help the kids that I'm caring for. So yeah, that's been, and I've been an attorney for kids in CPS cases before. And so that's probably the hard part is not going like full, like, I know what you should be doing here on people, but just kind of staying in my lane as a foster mom, but also trying to advocate and figuring out what that looks like.
Yeah.
Not been totally straightforward.
Yeah. You can say, well, I was Googling and it seems like maybe you could. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of what I do is like give advice to other foster parents, like how to navigate the court process. And that's something I always say is like, present it as someone else's idea that you're sure they already had. They just haven't acted on it. You know, like,
that's so
well,
smart.
I'm sure, you know, this is the next move you would make given the information that just came out. You know, I'm positive that's where you are. Let me know if I can help you with that or, you know, whatever, instead of saying like, how are you not?
Yes. Hey, that is like life experience. You know, that's good for anybody in any situation. Mm-hmm. I love it.
I want to tell you about a new great bra that I found. I love it. It's by Third Love. Third Love guarantees a perfect fit. They offer more than 70 bra sizes. Did you even know 70 bra sizes were a possibility? Well, they are. They have their signature half cup sizes. Maybe you're a half cup. I will tell you, I'm a half cup. That's all the information I'm giving you. The rest is top secret. Third Love is so convenient. You can skip the trip to the store. You can find your fit with their Fit Finder online. Just order it, try it on at home. If you don't like it, send it back. The cool thing is every customer has 60 days to wear it. You can wash it. You can put it to the test. Live your life in that bra. If you don't love it, return it and they will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Stop it. Love that. That is so important. Third Love sent me some bras and they actually were not quite the right size because, I mean, it wasn't on them. I ordered the wrong size. I'm not that good at numbers. The exchange was very free and very easy. And before I knew it, I had bras that fit. It is the most comfortable bra you will ever own. It's lightweight. It has super thin memory foam cups. They mold to your shape. It doesn't get any better than that. So Third Love knows that there is a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/SWP now. Find your perfect fitting bra and you'll get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/SWP for 15% off today.
Okay, so foster care, how did you first get involved? Was it when you had legal cases?
No, I actually first got involved in foster care when I was 16 years old. So I've been in the foster world for 17 years now. I volunteered at a local children's shelter when I was in high school here in Austin and first met kids as like peers of mine, which I didn't really think of at the time, but I'm really glad that was the way that I was exposed to it. Mm. And we went and threw birthday parties for the kids, like all the October birthdays, we'd get a party in October, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it was awesome. And I had no idea that foster care existed. I didn't know kids were being, you know, removed from their homes and put in, at that time, it was like an emergency shelter kind of where they're waiting for foster families. And they'd like had absolutely everything in their life taken away from them in, you know, 10 minutes. Yeah. And so I just like could not stop thinking about them from that time on. So since then, I've kind of done every other part of it. Like I've been a CASA volunteer. I've been a lawyer for kids in cases. I've been a mentor for teen girls and teen parents. And now I'm a foster parent. And I'm on the board of some different organizations and kind of starting to do more advocacy work, like with the legislature and things like that too.
That's so great. I want to just give a picture for listeners who don't know. My daughter was a like emergency removal and she came with like the clothes. She was in pajamas. She came with her pajamas and a doll, like her entire life. That's all she had. So for a 16-year-old, I just want to give a mental picture. Like, what do they come with and how much notice that they have? You said like 10 minutes.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like sometimes someone is showing up at their house or at their school at the end of the school day and saying, you're not going home with the parents or the people you thought you were going home with. You're getting in my car. You don't know me. I work for the state. Yeah. And you know, when they do these exercises, sometimes where they help people understand what it's like to lose everything. But when they say everything, they mean it can be everything from the people that you know are no longer in your life, your friends, your family, your school, your teachers, your coaches. But it's also things like the culture you were raised in, the foods that you're used to eating, maybe even the language you're speaking. You know, I live in a part of the country where we have a very predominant Spanish speaking population, and you can be transplanted immediately into an English speaking family. You know, so it's really everything. It could be your religious practices, like basically everything that was familiar to you has been taken away in an instant. And a lot, you know, it is for safety reasons, but it's also like a tremendous loss that these kids suffer. Because I take infants, all of my kids have come, well, came straight from the hospital at birth. So he came in a hospital issue onesie that was enormous, and he was wearing the hospital blanket and still had his like ID tags from the hospital on. Mm. And then one came in like a really kind of dirty onesie from his home with nothing else. And my current child is a similar situation. She didn't bring, you know, anything. And sometimes there is a lot of conflict when the kids are removed from home. So, you know, obviously their parents aren't thrilled. And so it's not really an environment that fosters like, let's pack you a suitcase and let's make sure you have your animals you like and, you know, all the right things. And it's just a like, we're just trying to get this kid out of this situation ASAP. And sometimes it just doesn't result in them kind of getting to like take anything from their, you know, from their home that they know with them to their next place.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, the trauma, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, because you know what's happening in foster care. So for those of us who don't know, like current things that you think are important to tell the general public, what do we need to know?
Oh, there's so many things. I mean, I would say one thing is that whatever your perception of foster care, you know, it kind of depends on who I talk to. Whatever your perception is of the children who are in foster care and their families and then the people caring for them, try to kind of set that aside and actually meet some of the people who are involved, because it is really easy, I think, to have a perception of any of those groups just from media or, you know, whenever I saw a story last night or about a child who was in foster care as an adult, you know, explaining his situation as a child. And there are some, you know, really bad foster homes. There are a few. Everyone that I know that does foster care is awesome and providing really safe, nurturing homes. And so I think it's easy for some things to become high profile, like in any situation, you know. So you have a, like, there was a young man who was in foster care who had run away, and then he wound up killing somebody in Austin last year, University of Texas. And that became the, like, this is children in foster care story, you know, which is, you know, the problem of like stereotyping any group. But that's kind of my number one thing I would say is just don't form an opinion about the kids in foster care or their families of origin or the people taking care of them without getting to know them, because the kids are as different as any other kids. You know, you have some kids who have certain backgrounds and certain issues, and different kids respond differently to trauma, you know, than others. And some of them become like exceptionally compliant and responsible and mature beyond their years. And some have other, you know, issues where they're not maturing or they're having like a really behavioral response to trauma and things like that. So that's kind of my thing is I know many, many kids in foster care who are completely wonderful and not like exceptionally high needs other than needing someone to like love them and help them feel safe and help them flourish. So that's my big thing. There are currently 400,000. Well, really at any given time, there are 400,000 kids in the U.S. in foster care.
Oh my gosh.
In a calendar year, there are 700,000. So, 'cause kids are coming and going, and there are about 100,000 kids in the U.S. who are currently available for adoption. So those are kids whose parents' rights have been terminated and they're just like waiting to be adopted. So yeah, so they're, you know, it's a problem with like a pretty big scope, but it pales in comparison to the number of like caring adults there are in the U.S. Mm. or churches and things like that. So yeah, I have a lot of PSAs about foster care, but yeah. Those are kind of my main ones, is like get to know some of the people in the system and before just deciding that they are a certain way.
Yes, that's so good. And I think it's having two adopted kids from foster care, I feel a lot of feelings about the horror movies that they make with kids who are adopted, killing their parents. I mean, stuff like that. You're like, oh my gosh, there's so many kids who kill their parents who are not adopted. And there's not so many kids who kill their parents anyway, but I'm just saying, like, it's not right. All foster kids are not the enemy or out to get us, but neither yeah. are birth parents, by the way. But I think a lot of times yeah. we think birth parents are bad news, and they're not. I mean, sometimes they are, but so are sometimes foster parents. Anyway, whatever.
Did you know Mother's Day is coming up? I mean, of course you do. It's our favorite day of the year. But even though if you're a mom, this day's about you, you probably have a mom in your life who you still need to do something for. So consider this as a gift. Baked by Melissa makes perfectly bite-sized cupcakes in very unique handcrafted flavors. Melissa sent me two packages to my house. I really wish I would have taken pictures, but they were inhaled at such a rapid rate that I did not. They were beautiful, and not just beautiful, they were delicious. Every cupcake is stuffed, it's ice, it's topped entirely by hand, and you can tell, they're beautiful. They choose the most delicious ingredients. They have Hershey's fudge, Oreo cookies, and the best cookie butter that you've ever tasted. And they're made so small, you can try every single flavor. They have 8 original flavors, but then they also have seasonal collections. And they have exclusive Mother's Day flavors like classic s'mores. I have to say the s'mores one was one of my favorites. They have an electric tie-dye one that is so bright and beautiful. Strawberry milkshake, sugar cookie. They even have a chocolate blackout cake cupcake. Stop it. It's so good. I loved that my whole family could sit around and we could each try each one and talk about it. It was a whole experience. So this Mother's Day, send all the moms in your life a perfect gift with Baked by Melissa. Go to bakedbymelissa.com today and use promo code SWP to get 15% off your next order. This is a special offer exclusively for Mom Struggling Well listeners, so make sure to take advantage of it. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. So again, that's 15% off at bakedbymelissa.com using promo code SWP. You will not be disappointed.
I had a question about how you remain positive in the face of the largeness and the immensity of this problem that obviously you're giving your life to, but do you ever feel like you're not making a difference or, you know, all that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard when you can't like unknow the things that you get exposed to, you know, yeah. And I think for me, the more I spend time in foster care, the more I'm convinced that I don't have the control or the power or the perfectness to like transform this whole thing on my own or even like in a group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just have to trust that I'm doing the part that God's called me to do and that, yeah. that he's going to do that little part along with a lot of other people in their part to move the needle on like redemption and putting families back together. It's a huge thing. I mean, honestly, from a practical standpoint, I have to sometimes cut off my thinking from like the entire scope of the problem and focus on the kids that I have in front of me and the situations mm-hmm. and their families mm-hmm. and what I can like practically do there. Because, you know, I've had both kids who are, I will say just that they're not in great home environments, but they were not like physically hurt. And then I've also had kids that are physically hurt as infants. Mm-hmm. In non-accidental ways. And it's just you start thinking about it and it's like, it can become completely overwhelming, but I'm so aware of like what I can do in a given day to help a child like feel loved and feel safe and help set their future caregivers up for success, whether it's me or somebody else. That feels really purposeful to me, I think in the moment. And I also think, like you said about birth families, I think when I started meeting birth families and understanding some of their story and knowing that some of the teenagers I worked with in foster care also were parents of kids in foster care.
Yeah.
It's not so black and white for me to say, like, I have a good life, I'm a good person, you are a bad person, you know, or even say like you've made bad choices. Like I'm fully convinced of the fact that if I grew up in a situation like them, I don't think I would have made different choices. Like, and I think that has really helped me say like my part in this is moving the needle a tiny bit here, and that's really what I can do. But yeah, the problem is huge. And I think it's issues like way bigger than foster care, even that, you know, you can kind of go down that path of like poverty and mental health and addiction. And it's like, I'm not equipped to really like tackle any of those as like global issues, but I am in a position right now to show love to a child and their family and maybe be the person that believes in them. And the thing I've kind of come up with for my kids is I want my kids that are raised in my home for any amount of time to be the soul breaker. And that's what I talk about to them as infants.
To be the what?
To be the cycle breaker. Mm. Like the kid that says this cycle of whatever in my family is going to stop with me, because that to me feels like, and who knows, you know, that's just what I'm praying for these kids.
Yeah.
Because if that child can kind of start a new narrative for their family, that will make so much difference just even beyond their own life.
Absolutely.
You know, and a lot of them are going back into their communities, hopefully a little bit better set up to live like a healthy life and feel like they are valued and that they don't have to fall into some similar patterns, or that they can reach out for help. Some of those really important things. So
that's
kind of the way I wrap my head around like helping one kid at a time. And it's hard because I would love, like, I always want to take in like a sibling group of five and I'm just going to buy a farm and like, you know, but I can't have 400,000 kids in my home. So I have to like focus on what I can do.
Yeah, it's hard. Sometimes I think I've only adopted two kids, but there's 100,000, you know, or I'm not fostering anymore and these kids are staying, and it feels less helpful that I don't have kind of like a cycle of kids coming through my house. Do you know what I'm saying?
Anyway, yeah, totally.
But it's ridiculous.
Do you listen to the Real Mom podcast?
I don't.
So that's by Foster the Family, which is like a really good foster family resource, but their most recent episode was a woman talking about that kind of like loss of identity as a foster mom, because she has six kids and I think four of the six are adopted through foster care and they're at their limit for their state. Mm-hmm. And so kind of like, how do you transfer your purpose from I'm a foster mom and I'm going to like help this, you know, revolving door of children to like, these are the kids that are my mission now, you know?
Yes.
Which I think I would totally struggle with that too.
Yeah. Okay. So you said something in the questions you answered for me that I had felt as well. And so I wanted you to talk about, and not that we're trying to say anything bad about moms, and moms are just saying things that are stressful, and I get it. Kids are stressful. But like, when you hear a mom say, I wish someone would just come take this kid because they are driving me crazy today.
Yeah.
Tell me about that as a foster mom.
Okay. So before I say this, I just have to say that I'm not a biological mom and I'm not an adoptive mom. So I don't have any permanent children right now. And I have a lot of grace for the things that people say. Because
certainly. Yes.
Yes.
But it's a different perspective that I want you to share. Yeah. That's all.
Well, so, I mean, okay. So I'll tell you, my first child came to me when he was 4 days old. I was his first like parent after the hospital. And he was with me until a week before his first birthday. So he called me mama. He thought that I was his mom forever. Mm-hmm. He knows my parents as his grandparents. He went on family vacations with me and did everything with me for a year. I made all the decisions for him. He actually never saw his parents after his birth. And then he left me a week before his first birthday and is going to be adopted by his extended family that kind of came up late in the case.
Okay.
So for a long time, probably for, I also halfway through my year with him, I was asked to adopt him. So I was his adoptive placement for a while.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Had kind of wrapped my head around that, since that wasn't the number one reason that I got into foster care, but after having a child that thinks I'm his mom and he feels like my kid, I was like, okay, I guess we're doing that.
Yes.
And then I went through about 7 months of he's leaving, he's not leaving, he's leaving, he's not leaving. And I couldn't make any decisions about our future. You know, I couldn't even in good conscience, like buy clothes, like silly things. Like I don't feel like I should buy 9 to 12 month clothing because he could leave in a week. And then I'm going to be sitting here with an entire wardrobe that breaks my heart again.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I didn't get to like plan his first birthday because I didn't know if he would be with me, which he wasn't at his birthday. And so I found like having a hard time kind of seeing like other people's like really hard day, you know, in air quotes. And I know that people are just venting and, but there are things that are really sensitive and it helps me think about like what other things I say that are probably not kind to other people, you know, like I have several friends who've struggled with infertility and then I have other people who are, you know, a lot of this, I fault social media for a lot of this, but, you know, talking about like, oh my gosh, we accidentally got pregnant again for the fifth time, like oopsies, you know, like, and then I have friends who like would seriously cut off an arm to have a child, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I felt is like, I'm reading about how, you know, your toddler has made a mess during breakfast. And so will someone come please take your kid? And I'm thinking like, I would do anything to have like another month with the kid that I have raised, like whether he's making a mess or like destroying my life or whatever, like I just want to have time with him, you know? And so I think that, it's just like a completely different perspective that a lot of people don't think about, but
yeah,
I have that. And I always talk about like the mom pyramid. And I don't mean that any type of motherhood is like easy or anything like that, but the way it's presented on social media a lot is like you have your, you know, general motherhood, like motherhood with a partner where you can post about things like, let's all think up a middle name for my child. And there's like 700 comments of people saying what they would name your child, you know, and that's what you're spending your time doing. And then you have like the next level, which is maybe like traditional parenting without a partner where it's like a little bit more logistical, like how are we going to get this to this, whatever.
Okay.
And you have foster mom parenting, which is like, does anyone know what to do when my child lights my house on fire? Right. Like a next level.
Yes. Like that's the top. There's a lot less support and floofy stuff, you know, fluffy.
Yeah, exactly.
Things, yes.
And then you have like the teeny weeny top, which is like single foster parenting, which is like my child has lit my house on fire and I'm the only parent for these five children. Like, how do I get five kids out of the house when it's on fire? And by the way, foster children are wonderful and they're not going to set your house on fire.
But yes.
Just hypothetically.
Yes.
But, you know, it's kind of that sort of thing where it's just the things that occupy like most of my brain space and the brain space of other foster moms that I know is just different. And the kind of things that I like worry about are different than if I had kids that I knew were going to be with me, probably like barring some tragedy, you know, and the way that I spend my time with them is different because it's limited, you know?
Yes. So, you know, having been on both sides, I definitely have done both things. I remember just being really jealous of other moms who knew, that tomorrow their kids would still be there. And then I've been the mom that's like, get them out of here. But never, not until I knew they were going to stay. But I just wanted you to share that because it is a very different perspective. It's really hard to, I mean, I didn't tell my daughter I loved her for a while because I'm like, I can't do it for me. I think I should have, but you know what? Take that back. I told her that I loved her and she would tell me that she loved like her favorite cartoon character. And I'm like, okay, that, you know, but it's just a very weird situation when you're not sure how long you're going to have what you currently have.
Yeah. And I was one time in a grocery store when I got a text that my mom and sister had been hit by a drunk driver and they wound up being fine. But I remember like that feeling of everyone else is like in a normal, happy land, like around me. And I am like suspended in time in some bizarre other, like, this is not my reality that like everything's fine, you know? And that's how I feel a lot about foster parenting is like a lot of people around me, you know, I take my kid to swim lessons or something and they're just living in a different reality than I am in this moment, you know, because the things that are true for my kid or the fact that somebody's analyzing all of my parenting all the time, or the fact that my child has multiple parents, or we don't know where she's going to live in 2 months. It affects everything. And it just kind of makes it, it just feels like I'm not always like in the same mindset as like the global motherhood community, you know?
Yes, I'm sure that's incredibly lonely feeling.
Yeah, it definitely can be.
I felt like everybody in my house, first of all, I felt like there was tons of strangers in my house and everybody has a clipboard and they're writing down how I'm parenting. And this is a lot of pressure.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. I mean, and like I've had extended family members of my kids be very hypercritical, and I've had them also be very appreciative and like not at all critical. But when you have hypercritical people, it kind of adds another layer to like, I'm documenting like every time my child scratches her own face, you know, so that you know that I didn't do that and that I am aware that her nails need to be cut. And, you
oh
know,
my
just
gosh,
like
I know it.
Things that you would not even think about with
taking pictures of every single tiny bruise that they did to themselves and trying to prove that they did. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The yeah. very second that my foster daughter came, who's now my daughter, I gave her keys because I didn't have any toys because I had 30 minutes notice. And she immediately stabbed herself in the eye with them. And I'm like, oh, okay, great.
Yeah, we're doing great. We're doing great over here.
Documenting yeah. this injury.
Right,
oh,
right.
Oh, gosh.
It's so true.
Okay, so really quick, we're almost out of time, but how do you handle the trauma of losing a kid that you knew was never officially yours, but it was going to be, but now it's not?
It's the hardest thing I've ever gone through in my life. I mean, it's just really, really hard. I think for me, it's been one of the situations that I have to like just trust the place that that child is supposed to be raised is where he will be raised, even if I can't really like understand how that is true. And so for me, it's a combination of like the loss of parenting that child and having him with me, and also concerns for like what will be his reality in the future. And I think that's true of any kid, you know, that leaves, like, but it was really, really, really hard. I mean, and I think my greatest concern, just not for myself, but was for what is he going to think? Like, is he going to think that I left him somewhere? You know, it's really hard, honestly. We had like a very long transition of like 7-ish weeks where I knew for sure he was leaving, and we kind of did a lot of things to intentionally introduce him because he did not know the people who were going to be taking care of him. And that was the hardest thing I've ever gone through, because it was my job to like help him know that they are his parents. And I can say that now without bursting into tears, but I could not then. And so like we worked with a therapist, and I wrote him a book about like saying goodbye to me and saying hello to them. And I probably can't talk about it without crying, actually.
I'm sorry. How do you know that this is something you should keep doing to yourself?
I think because I know that I can. And honestly, like I'm a firm believer in the fact that not everybody should be a foster parent or even like strongly consider it. But yeah. I'm definitely a person that like lives in optimist happy land like 99% of the time. I'm an Enneagram 7, which means it's not always like a healthy place. Like it's not always like this is where I should be. But my default is practically to say like, this is a terrible thing. This sucks. And like, what are the good parts of this? And I also think, at least according to my psychiatrist, I'm emotionally stable at this time.
Okay. So, okay.
You know, so like I talk to people a lot who say things like, you know, this tragic thing happened to one of my biological children 5 years ago, and I still cry about it every day. And I don't know them, but I can say like, you need to talk to a mental health professional before you do something like foster care, because it's going to push like your mental health boundaries in every way. And so I think you have to be like a person who can kind of take a lot of punches emotionally and even just like hits to your parenting ego and all that, and kind of like rebound from it. And I have this strong sense that like that is something that I am equipped to do, just my personality. And so it's not fun, and I've had to like take breaks and have a lot of support from people, but I feel like it is so purposeful for me to keep doing it. And I feel like emotionally capable. Like I don't feel like I am suffering emotional losses that I'm not with, or that I'm like never going to recover from, if that makes sense. But I do feel like every child that leaves, I feel the weight of like that loss kind of coming along with me through life, if that makes sense. And
yeah,
so I definitely feel like a different person than before I started. And before I like started losing kids that I've cared for, but I feel like I'm still able to do it. And my tagline that I always tell people that a lot of foster parents say is somebody is going to bear the emotional weight of this situation. Like it's either going to be adults or it's going to be kids,
wow,
you know, and that doesn't mean everyone does it, but I feel like at this stage in my life and with the support I have, I'm a person who can bear that emotional weight so that a kid can like feel safe. And, you know, even with my first kid, like the 7-week transition we did was torture for all of the adults. It was torture for me. It was torture for his new parent. We had to co-parent a lot for that time.
Yeah.
And I had to like start things like I'd start the bath, put him in it, make sure he's okay. And then I'd back away and they'd come in and see if he will like tolerate that from them, you know? And so it was like the slowest ripping of the Band-Aid you can imagine.
Goodness.
But he's thriving now. He thinks they are his parents now because we did that. And so, you know, it's something that like, I'm just willing to do it knowing that it's beneficial for them, but it's hard. And I think you need a lot of like support and people who aren't going through that to be with you in that, if that makes sense.
Yes. So that is the question I want to ask about, because like you said, not everybody is able to do this at this time. Or even would it be wise? I actually kind of considered for a while fostering again, and the people closest to me were like, well, maybe that's not the best. So how would you say that the rest of us could support a foster mom?
Yes. So I came up with a totally made up statistic that for every one foster parent or foster family, it takes 10 people who are not fostering to support them.
Okay.
That's just kind of what has worked in my life.
Okay.
But I think it really takes people that are not like one time helping, but truly invested in knowing what's going on with me, knowing what's going on with my kids to the extent that I can tell them, knowing what important days are, you know? So for me, I kind of have like a menu of things that people can help. And, you know, some of the really practical stuff like you do for other parents, you know, bringing meals, you know, for me, like offering to clean my place or get my, you know, oil changed in my car, pick up stuff for us when you're at the grocery store, that sort of thing. And then a lot of like intangible support, like praying for us, especially on like big days, like court days are really stressful, or when a kid is leaving, things like that. And then definitely babysitting is kind of the number one need that I have. And I think a lot of other foster parents share that because people have to be specifically, you know, approved to do that. It's different in every state, but, so that's just a hard thing. I can't, if my friends are all going out and they're all leaving the kids with one sitter, I can't just drop my kids off with them unless that person's approved. And so it really helps. I've gotten like pretty much everyone that I see regularly to just go ahead and get approved, even if they're unlikely to babysit. Just because that way I can, you know, I'm in a small group and if I get there and there's like one of the guys is there already, I can leave my kid there and run to the grocery store and don't have to worry about like who's approved and that sort of thing. So
yes, that's good.
That's super helpful. If you want to advocate, I think CASA is the best organization to volunteer with. They appoint a person to go into court and advocate for the kid. It's not a lawyer, but I think that's a really, really valuable resource.
And people can volunteer to be the advocate, the CASA advocate.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot to do. And I say, you know, a lot of people I talk to don't even know foster families. So I think kind of a step one is, you know, even contact local foster agencies and just say, I would love to do something for one of your families. Like they will get you in touch with someone like that. And you can start kind of building that, because I think a lot of the people supporting foster families are other foster families or people who've previously fostered. And a lot of people are kind of at their max. And so it kind of takes like going into a space that you may not already know people, like maybe you just don't know anything about fostering, and just making, you know, building a relationship with one foster family and then seeing what you can do. And I think a lot of it's just like the normal daily stuff that we do for each other, but finding those foster families and doing that for them.
I love it. This has been so helpful. I hope that it's a really good perspective shift and education for people who are listening. And thank you so much for what you do. I do have one final question. What can you not stop talking about these days?
Oh, I feel like I'm a pusher of like products. So two things I really love right now, like today, is I love Poshmark, which is an online like resale clothing kind of situation. So I have both sold clothes on there, and then I have bought like really nice clothes for almost no money on there.
Okay.
What I love as a competitive person is that you can bid on things, like not eBay style, but you just say, hey, I'll give you this much for your sweater or whatever. So one thing I do is like, if I want designer jeans, I go to like Nordstrom, try them on, figure out what I need. And then I go look on Poshmark and, you know, find someone who's selling some like lightly used jeans, and I offer them like $20 for them. And so I've gotten like a lot of really nice stuff that way.
That's great.
I love that. Yeah. What else am I loving? I know this is so silly, but I love just like going on walks outdoors in Austin with my kids. All of the kids that I've had have had exposure to different substances, either in utero or after, and they're all really awesome babies, like generally speaking, but they all have, you know, the like witching time period. And so we will just go and like walk outside for forever as we kind of wait for bedtime to roll around. And it has been my therapy. It's their therapy. And it makes everybody so much happier. So I do that. I try to like grab friends and do that, or just like make laps around my parking lot at my apartment. So
good.
I'm doing that, and that it's March now because the sun is back. And so I can do that and not feel sad about life.
Exactly. That's so good. Yay. Well, Holly, thank you so much. Really.
Yeah, of course. It's so great to chat with you.
Okay, so I was sneaky and I did not tell you what the topic was because I was afraid that you wouldn't listen. I think so many of us are so busy that the idea that we should be foster parents and we're not makes us feel terrible. Maybe that's just me and I'm projecting onto you, but I definitely feel that pressure, and I have been a foster parent and I still feel bad that I'm not currently a foster parent. So I snuck it in on you so that you would hopefully listen and accidentally realize that there are ways to either be a foster parent or support a foster parent that is very manageable for you in your life. I have a friend who's a foster parent, and honestly, all I did was if she sent out an email and said, does anybody have this thing? I would say, I have it and I'm bringing it over right now. Like, it wasn't even hard. And so I really hope that you got a great perspective shift from hearing from Holly. Do not put any, just even a hint of shame on yourself for not being a foster parent. All I ask you to do is pray and ask God, is that something he'd have you do? Or in what way would he have you support these kiddos who are in some desperate situations? So what will your strategy be to struggle well based on what Holly said? Maybe foster parenting has already been on your heart, and so you take that next faithful step to find an agency that can certify you to be a foster parent. Maybe you do that scary thing that she mentioned and you call an agency up and say, please give me a family to love on and I will contact them and just see what they need. What a great way to practically show your children what it looks like to love the people who need it. The Bible says that God sets the lonely in families, and families do not always mean blood relatives or legally adopted. You could be a family for a kiddo who needs a family. Even just the auntie who comes over and brings pizza on Tuesday nights. Who even knows what God has in store? Maybe that's your next faithful step. I loved the way that she said that she helps foster families encourage the lawyers to do work that they should be doing. Present it as someone else's idea that you're sure they've already had. That's brilliant. Brilliant. That'll work with your boss. That'll work with your husband. It's just all in the presentation. So maybe you struggle well this week by helping somebody know something that you're sure they already know, and see if that doesn't move the needle on that goal that you've been having that you would love to get accomplished. Ladies, if you got something great out of this episode, please hit share and send it to someone. You can text it to them. You can email it to them. You can subscribe to the show on their phone when they're not looking. That's not a bad thing. It's a helpful thing. You're just being helpful. And also, make sure that you are subscribed to the show so that you don't miss next week. We are having a Struggle and Sisters episode. We're talking about mental health, our mental health. We got some listener comments. We're talking about y'all's mental health. We're talking about some very interesting arrests that have happened recently. Lots of people with lots of mental health things going on. Also, when you shop on Amazon this week, go to amazon.com/shop/struggle-well-projects and that will use our show's affiliate link, and that helps because Amazon gives a couple cents to the show, doesn't cost you anything extra. So consider using that link every time you go to Amazon. Also, don't forget to join me on Instagram at Struggle Well Project. Together, we will continue the practice of loving our actual lives. Ladies, our lives are good. We just have to realize it. And remember, perfection is nonsense. It's not even a thing, okay? And peace is a perspective shift away. You don't have to keep striving. You're already enough. Let me pray for us. Lord, I think of all the sweet kiddos who have been ripped out of their homes. They get in a car with a stranger. They don't have any of their stuff. They don't know where they're going, and they don't know if they'll ever be back. If that happened to us adults, we would flip our lids. And yet it happens all the time to kiddos who have even less ability to handle it. Lord, I know it breaks your heart. Would you help it break our heart? God, would you help us get involved in whatever way we can? Lord, I pray against any shame or guilt for the people who this is not the right thing for them. But God, I pray that you would just irritate the fire out of the people who know that they are supposed to do something and haven't yet. God, bother them until they're finally obedient. It feels like a really mean thing to say, but Lord, you can accomplish your purposes, and we pray that you would do that. And the rest of us who do not feel like fostering is what we're supposed to do right now, help us figure out how to work some small way of helping into our ridiculously busy lives. Lord, I pray for Hallie. Pray that you would bless her beyond all that she could ask or imagine. Lord, I pray that you would just supernaturally comfort the sweet babies that go to bed tonight, not knowing when are they going home? Are they going home? Who is my mom? Where is my house? Lord, you're the great comforter. And we know, even though we don't understand it, we know you are big enough to handle this. So we just pray for comfort for those sweet kids. In Jesus' name, amen.